Happy holidays, insiders. Before we get started, wanted to let you know that Inside the 18 and the Union GK app will be in Richmond, Virginia, December 15th to the 17th to perform some live shows, support the Keepers for Good charity, and share a demo on the power of Union Premium. For more info, go to richmondgoalkeepingacademy.com. And if you want us to come to your town, all you got to do is DM us at Goalkeeper Podcast on the Union and tell us what you've got in mind. Thanks for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from Hollywood, California. With me in Woodland Hills, California, the one and only 99 World Cup winner, Saskia Weber, and joining us from the cold depths of Orlando, Florida, we have Cavalry. It's such a tongue twister. I swear I'm going to be able to pronounce it. Cavalry FC goalkeeper coach Jake Davis. Jake, what's up, dude?
Thanks for having me on, Mike. It is a tongue twister, but we won't get into that too much today. A little bit of a sensitive topic, I would say. Oh, I'm confused too. Cavalry. They always get it wrong. It's simple, but it's complicated at the same time. Cavalry. Yeah. So thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
And we're excited. Obviously, you know, it was funny because we reached out in the summertime and I was like, hey, Jake, do you want to come on the show? And you're like, you know what? Let's wait. I have an announcement to make. So let's wait until that settles down first. And then the next thing I know, you're in Canada because you were at Houston Dynamo, like I think a lot of people were familiar with. Why don't you just kind of explain, first off, the Canadian Premier League? I think a lot of people are unfamiliar with it. And second of all, how you ended up out there.
Yeah, so I was with the Dynamo at that time. Actually, when you were reaching out, I was with the Dash as well, kind of helping out at some crazy time. So I was kind of doing two things at once. So it was like the craziest time of year there. And I knew that the youth scene wasn't really for me long term. I know that I wanted to get into it, but I knew that I didn't want to stay there, you know, 3 to 5 years. I wanted to find myself another pro club that I thought I could grow in. And I thought that I would enjoy my work because to me, that's really, really important, right? To kind of like enjoy your work. We're really, really blessed to be able to do what we do. So you have to like it. So long story short, Cavalry, I had known about. I didn't know so much about the club, but I had heard of them through a friend. And a friend of a friend of a friend kind of was like, hey, there's this opening, don't really know like much about it. And I went through the process. And with the club, it was very, very, very in-depth. And that really excited me because I could tell that they were a big club. They were doing good things. And the CPL, I knew nothing about. And again, that kind of made me nervous, but that also really made me kind of excited about it because I wanted to do something different. You know, I didn't know the players. I didn't know the staff. I didn't know anybody really in the league. So I knew that I would be challenged in that way. So yeah, the CPL is a first division, which is really exciting. And the standard of play is getting better every year. It's coming up to the sixth year of the league.
Wait, hold on. Wait, 6 years.
Yep. So it's only been around for 6 years.
What?
Five years. This will be the sixth year coming up. So it's growing really, really fast.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like I thought I was like deep in the weeds of soccer. I did not know the Canadian Premier League has been around for 6 years. So I need to do a better job in regards to my own research.
They have a football league too.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, I know.
That's been around a little bit longer.
I'm aware.
Just in case you didn't know.
I mean, literally every Canadian listener and viewer right now has just shut it off. They're like, we're just done with this.
No, to be fair, guys, like people in the country don't know that either. They're like, wow, it's been around that long. Like, but the biggest thing I would say about the league is it doesn't seem 5 years old. It seems much older, which is a testament to the kind of what they do. And what I've been told is previous years, I might not have said that, but you know, this past year was a great year of growth. I think it's a tremendous league. You know, for the final, we had 14,000 fans there.
Nice.
Great stadiums. You know, the fan bases are really good. The clubs are really good. They're not growing too fast. You know, they're growing, but I think they're doing it smartly. You know, it's only 8 teams right now. But I think that fits, to be fair. I think that fits right now. They probably need a little bit more. They probably need to get to 12 by like 2026, I would say. But right now it's still relatively small.
You know, it's interesting what you just said right there, Jake, because Susk, it's just I'm just kind of seeing the parallels between the NWSL's growth and how the CPL is trying to do everything, you know, slowly, gradually, but surely, until the point now where you got like 32,000 fans in like San Diego and Angel City and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, a lot of people don't realize how long the NWSL has been around because it was a slow growth as well, you know, and people are like, it's been around for over 12 years. Yeah, it has, you know, two failed leagues before that. But, you know, now it's just the way they did it and the way each team and each new franchise is coming in is just, you know, it's huge. It's, you know, $150 million to be a franchise, basically.
You know, it's interesting what you just said.
I might've gotten that number wrong, but that's okay.
No, I mean, but hey, it sounds fantastic. Let's just go with
that.
No,
but I think when all is said and done, that's what Bay Area was, but still it's the point. The point is that a lot of people now, you know, with the huge broadcasting package and everything like that, and like now people are like, oh, wow, this is new. It's not new. It's just they've taken their time and they didn't give up on it.
You know, and obviously, you know, Jake, you know, Canada's had a long history of goalkeepers. It's not like this is a new thing type of now. I mean, look, even just in the LAFC, you know, semifinal match, you know, Maxime Crepeau's, you know, performance that he had right there, obviously Canadian goalkeeper right there, you know, obviously our friend Dane, you know, over in Minnesota, you know, Kaylin Sheridan. I mean, absolutely.
I have to throw that in.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's one of the best in the world, right? One of the best in the world right there. So yeah, sorry, Kaylin.
I know, Mike.
Well, I was just thinking of recent.
I'm kidding. Anyway,
you know, the thing is Jake, is that do you think that the Canadian Premier League, were you surprised with the level of the goalkeepers when you got there?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I was surprised. You know, I didn't really know what I was first getting myself into, and then the more I researched the league, the more I watched, I was like, okay, like there's some good players here. And I think the goalkeepers are definitely part of that, and the league likes to push young players, and there's a lot of young goalkeepers that you might see within the next few years kind of move on, which is ideally the league's goal. You know, you don't necessarily want to be a lifer in this league right now. You know, you probably want to move on, but it's a good stepping stone for sure.
I'd love to see a woman for the NWSL, a franchise in Canada.
I think there's rumored to be a Canadian women's league coming. I don't know much about it, but I think that's rumored. I know absolutely nothing besides that.
Well, there's so much depth in Canada, and I mean, just, you know, look at college teams here and everything, and even the NWSL, like they've always been so strong on the women's side. Yeah. You know, and so I wouldn't be surprised, and that would be much invited, that or come in with an NWSL franchise. I mean,
yeah, Toronto would do well. There's tons of places that would do really, really well.
That's interesting that you brought that up, Jake, because, you know, like, and Susk, because the thing is that like a lot of people were concerned with the Canadian Premier League, that like, that was gonna, that the MLS teams would cannibalize that league, that it would not, that it would be very difficult. Is there a feeder system between the CPL and those Canadian MLS teams at all?
There's not one officially. And I think, at least our club works well with those teams, you know, trying to either sell players on to them, trying to play them in games. You know, we realize where we are And I think they realize where they are. And at the same time, they need us. And at the same time, we need them. So I think we do a good job of kind of living in our lifestyle, but, you know, not necessarily like a feeder system. And I think that's because we are a first tier, and it's, you know, we want to sell like our product as well.
Right.
Yeah. No, I get that completely. But, you know, I mean, obviously, Susk, you know, we've had the conversation regarding USLW, you know, starting next year, and you know, and understanding, you know, what the role to improve the not only goalkeeping, but just the game in general in the United States, you know, it's to be beneficial to all the players as opposed to trying to compete. And it sounds like the CPL, you know, understands it's a first tier league in Canada, but at the same time that it wants to give opportunities to players to play, you know, in other leagues as well, like Major League Soccer would be a different league. Or it's the same thing as, like, you know, New England Revolution. If they just held on to their goalkeepers as opposed to selling them to Chelsea and, you know, places like that, it wouldn't help their development.
No, I think that with goalkeepers especially, and we've talked about this so much, it's so important to share your goalkeepers in a weird sense, because it's the one position where you don't get the games and you don't get the playing time. And, you know, you can sit there and you can hoard your goalkeepers and have three solid goalkeepers, two sitting on the bench, and it's not going to get them anywhere. It's not going to make them better. So loan them out and then bring them back when you need them. And they've gotten 50 games in, you know, no matter where they go and play. And we talked about how important that is. And on the women's side, I think it's hugely important, which is why I wish there was sort of a collaboration between the new league that's coming out next year and the NWSL to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, Jake, question for you, you know, again, and I apologize for my ignorance when it comes to the CPL and everything like that. Like, what, so where do most of the goalkeepers come from in the league? And are we looking at about a USL type comp, or what are we looking at here?
I would say Canadian based is, I don't think there's an international or foreign spot right now used for a starting goalkeeper, not off the top of my head. So a domestic player, and some have played in the USL before, some have played college in the States. They've kind of come from everywhere. Some are rookies that, you know, were at like an MLS academy. So there's really a path for like everybody. I wouldn't say that the goalkeepers have all gone through like one path. I would say there's a whole mix of it.
I mean that
Canadians are everywhere. Canadians are everywhere. That's what I'm learning, is like they're like somehow somewhere, like
there's a Canadian.
You have a passport. Yeah, you have a passport, you're Canadian. Like random country. So they're playing there, and okay, like they want to come back home. And I think that's a lot of it is they're very proud to come back home and play in a league of their own, because previously, you know, they haven't had that.
Oh, I mean, some people are very familiar with that, not having a league of their own to come back to.
Yeah. It's very, like now that you say it, it's a lot like that. It's those two leagues are very similar. And I would say if the CPL continues on that track, that's a very, very good thing.
You know, Saskia, it's such a really great point what Jake just brought up there in regards to like Canadians wanting to play at home and everything like that. And obviously, you know, when there was no league in the United States for, you know, for players to come back to on the women's side, when after the WUSA folded and WPS and all that sort of thing, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, the comfortability of being able to play in front of your friends and your family and your, you know, the people that helped bring you to the level that you are. You know, not saying that there's anything wrong with going and wanting to experience a different culture, but to have that opportunity to be able to play at home is massive.
No, absolutely. I think what's exciting for me now, though, is that there's so many places to play. And, you know, it's kind of the flip in a sense, as like, I would love to be playing now and have a choice with my Dutch passport, my European passport, to go play, you know, whether it's in France or England or Spain and stuff. That wasn't there either. So you only had a couple choices, Japan, Sweden, to go and play and get paid to play. But then to know that you can, whether it's finish your career here at home and play in front of 35,000 people or start your career here, I think it's huge. And there's something to be said about it. You know, what I love we do is, especially when you have young players like an Alyssa Thompson and stuff like that, that get to start playing in front of their home crowds. Like, she's from LA. She gets to play for LA. You know, that's incredible.
I mean, that I was just literally thinking about that. It's the same thing, you know, with CPL. It's like, you know, you could have a young player that's homegrown from Calgary who gets their first professional opportunity in Calgary. So they're in a comfortable environment where they're used to the environment. They're able to stretch their legs, learn how to become a pro, and then be able to move on somewhere else.
And you see that in ice hockey a lot when, if you're going to compare Canada, like, I think, you know, you get those young players in Canada, they come up through that Canadian system, play pro, whether it's for in Calgary or wherever, and then move on in, you know, come into the States to play with other teams.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
And they, that's a huge point of like wanting to play in front of your family, in front of your friends. And we try to draw on that a lot. Our goalkeeper had that same path. You know, he was from the city. He went away when he was 14 because, again, there was really no club at the time. So he was a Whitecaps, you know, from under 15s, under 17s. He was a homegrown, and then eventually he had to leave, and eventually he found his way back, you know, to play for us. And it's a huge story of being able to play in front of your family, in front of your friends. And we have field players that are the same, that they want to come home, and it's great for us as a staff to be able to find those players.
I mean, you know, obviously, you know, that's something that, you know, in the early days of MLS, you know, and obviously, you know, WUSA, Saskia, you know, when all of you 99ers, you know, came back to play at home, you know, whether it's to finish your careers or you know, to continue your careers, it's just a very, very cool and special for, you know, the local fans to be able to see these players that they've been watching on television, you know, all these years. All right, let's get into this topic, because I think it's a really cool topic, Jake, and that is receiving skills in possession. First off, maybe for some people out there who are kind of unfamiliar with what we're referring to, what do you mean by receiving skills specifically?
Yeah, I would say those skills that when the ball is coming back to you, about how you trap it, about where you place the ball, not just your prep touch, but more about the skills that it takes prior to that, so that when you have the ball at your feet, you're able to use it. And I would say that these skills are sometimes really, really basic, but, you know, fundamentally, should be taught at a young age, but also enhanced throughout your year. So, you know, if you're 27, you can still be working on these skills.
You know, and
you know, one of the really interesting things, and by the way, we're going to be looking at some great examples from a match standpoint, and obviously from a training session standpoint that Jake provided, you know, later on, Susk. But I think a lot of the times when it comes to receiving skills, a lot of young players just focus on the technical of being able to like trap a ball and be able to strike a ball, as opposed to like the tactical of like, you know, where they're moving in the space, you know, how are they in a good supporting position? You know, is that prep touch being put in a position where now they've got good options from a distribution standpoint?
No, absolutely. The tactical side of it is huge. What are you going to do with the ball next? And you can't make the decision once you have the ball.
Yeah.
Right. You have to know what your options are so that when you receive that ball, you know, one, two, three options. Am I going short? Am I going long? Like, I'm going, you know, to the flank. What am I doing with it? Putting yourself in the right position and setting yourself up. Because if you're making that decision when you get the ball, it's going to be too late. And because you're going to get pressed. And it's, if it takes you three touches to make your decision, you know, that's not where you want to be, especially not in the pro game.
I mean, that's such a great point right there, you know, in regards to like the amount of time that you have when you move up levels, Jake. So you're going to show some pictures here from the CPL. What, first off, why did you choose the pictures you did choose? And then what are we going to see when we see these pictures?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to showcase a few different moments where even at a youth level, you know, you might think, okay, it's wrong, you know, to do this, but I want to showcase that in every moment, you know, it's not always going to be the same answer. So if you go back to that first one, actually, Marco actually freezes the ball still here, you know, so he takes his touch with his left foot. If you keep playing it on, and I can maybe try, and he stops it there. So the ball is actually stopped dead. And a lot of times in youth football, you might hear, okay, don't stop the ball dead, you know, keep it moving. If he was to take that touch to his left to try to rotate it, well, that's not our style of play. That's not what we train to do. So he freezes the ball, and then he's able to assess, okay, they have a twin striker duel there. So, okay, hopefully if he freezes it still, they will open up, and then he's able to then split and then play it through. So I wanted to showcase a few different moments that, you know, the right answer isn't always the same answer.
Susk, thoughts here?
Well, yeah, the other problem is if he takes a prep touch to his left, right, he's probably under pressure immediately. And he's also made in this situation, he's also made it very obvious what he's going to do. He's, you know, and now that player is forcing the play instead of him forcing the play. So by taking a tight prep touch here, the player is kind of like, okay, kind of pulls back his run. You see it. All right. Well, he didn't take a prep touch to left because that's what he was assuming. And he just killed it. And now the option is to go up center. And if he doesn't, he could take a touch and go right. But, like, don't make the answer so obvious. Like, okay, I'm taking the prep touch. Because that player is assuming that's what you're going to do as well. So you have to read what's going on in front of you.
It's so funny that you just brought this up, because this is honestly one of these mind-blowing moments for me. Because you're right. At the youth level, I can't tell you how many times, including myself and my own coaching,
automatically take that long touch to prep to kick. And if you did that here and you took a long touch or a long prep touch, even if it's a yard or two to your left, you're done, because he's on you right there.
And you know what, Jake, you just brought up a really good point in regards to micro. I was just thinking about this yesterday when I was working with some less experienced goalkeepers, let's just say, that if we micromanage and we overcoach them, then they just start trying to do the patterns that we're telling, that because they hear our voice in their head and they're like, well, I'm supposed to do this right now because that's what I always do, as opposed to actually scanning and reading the field.
Yeah, I would say like 100%. You want to show them some ways, but it's not always going to be the same. And a lot of these clips, you'll see where the goalkeeper starts pretty high and they have to move backwards. And a lot of times we're working on these really clean passes. Well, that's not what we're getting back in the game. So if you look at this ball here, it's bouncing back to him. He's got a backpedal. He has to scan at the same time. So those are the skills that we're working on, right? So you have to backpedal. You have to know what surface to use. You have to know where to put the ball. You have to know when to put it there as well. So on here, he backpedals. Marco takes his touch. And again, I want to showcase this kind of shape that we have. Because in training, that's what we're going to have. We're going to have a diamond because that's how we like to play. So he's going to typically get the balls back from those same areas. So those are the skills that he's working on in training, right?
And
the
by back giving pedal,
the receiving.
And by giving him depth, it gives him more time on the ball.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. You know, but also he has to back up in that situation based on the bounce of that ball. If he tried to.
And the pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And I mean, you just brought up a really good point, Jake, in regards
to because if he doesn't backpedal here, Mike, and everything, and he stays high, then there's only one real choice with that ball, and it's to send it. Right.
Yeah.
And because of the pressure and everything, you're going to get yourself into trouble. So by giving himself some depth here, now it turns into, okay, I can do the short pass into our triangle. And now we're out with control of the ball.
And if we look at the press there, we know he knew that it was a one-man press. So he knew that if he gave himself time, right, by backing up, that he could take a touch. He knew if he took a touch, he would have multiple options, right? So if you freeze it there, he really has three options and then a fourth to then go long. all because of the skills just to receive the ball, and not necessarily only because of the first touch, but because of all of those skills used, right? Mm-hmm. The back pedal, the scan, the first touch, all of them combined.
By the way, something I want to bring up right here. First off, Jake, what a cool stadium. I feel like I'm like, it looks like it's Europe. It looks like it's Europe right there. Like,
I was thinking that too, unless you're the guy sitting behind the pole, but I was thinking that too.
It's amazing, guys. It's loud. The fans are phenomenal here. ATCO Field is a very interesting setup. I think it was first in equestrian stadium. I don't know if
it's what it looks like.
So, and I think it's repurposed from that, and it's very unique, cool kind of stadium. Super loud, fans are great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just picturing of like what I see in the FA Cup, and there's like a house in the background, somebody's on their yard with like a lawn chair watching the game.
It's exactly what I thought, and it's pretty cool, to be honest.
So let's talk about this one. When we're talking about this, I want to go on to the next picture right here, just from a time standpoint here. But I want to talk about the fact that you brought up, you know, understanding how you play. I think a lot of times, you know, Jake, as young coaches or even experienced coaches, a lot of times in our session design, we put together patterns of scenarios that we want to see in a game, as opposed to like the scenarios they're actually seeing. And how important is it when you're putting those session designs to make sure that the movements of the players, the outfield players, is realistic to how you play?
Yeah, so important. And at the youth level, you want to showcase kind of a lot of different movements, because if you only showed one sort of movement, well, that's not going to help them. But if you, at the pro level, if you do the same thing, well, that's also not going to help you, because the teams are probably going to change. So you have to be flexible, but you also want to see the patterns work. So I would say it's twofold there of, you know, you want to showcase those, but you have to be flexible within it.
I mean, obviously at the youth level, it's a little bit of a different thing, Susk, because you're trying to train kids to learn the game, and they're not always going to be playing at that club on that U11 team. So you want to show them different pictures, but at the professional level, you know, obviously it's about being successful, I'm assuming, or even at the collegiate level.
Right. But you have to be flexible, like, you know, and show options, because guess what? You're getting scouted. So if you're doing the same patterns and everything all the time, the other team knows it. And if they don't, they didn't do their job.
So I love the graphic work here, Jake. This is very, very high level right here.
Look at that.
I mean, my gosh, man.
Nothing too crazy.
What are you trying to showcase right here?
Yeah, I want to showcase the shape here. And so from our perspective is – and I think in soccer and in kind of like a broad view, shapes and systems are all kind of changing. So you could say that we're playing a three back here, right? You could also say that we're playing a four and the goalkeeper is one. So I don't really want to get too caught up there, but just want to showcase where his short options are, right? So the goalkeeper has an option to his left, an option right down the center, and an option to his right. And he's kind of the base of that. So showcasing that, those are the scenarios that I want to see in training of, okay, he can receive from the left and he can play central. He can receive from the center and play right. Those are the options that he has. And based on the pressure, we want to get the ball to the center. So you'll see that in some training clips as well.
Just kind of going back to here, Susk, is there anything specifically you're seeing right here that you're noticing?
No, again, I think it's just, the positioning is key here. And it's like you said, Mike, it's not just about the ball, the technical side of receiving the ball, the touch. Where are you positioning yourself? Because he's just as important. This diamond doesn't work if he's not positioned properly. And so, you know, you're not just standing there like a cone and your players have to find you. You have to constantly be positioning yourself so that you have optimal distribution options in front of you. So if he was just a cone in the center of his goal and then the players can't find him, you know, that ruins the shape. And so what are you doing as a goalkeeper to constantly position yourself so you can create this diamond and what they're used to getting out of, and three solid options. And again, the fourth option is to go long.
Yeah. You know, and one thing, Jake, that I notice a lot in the youth game is that, let's go back to right here, right? Instead of taking this angled run right here, how many young players would stay where they are.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's my point.
Yeah. And the thing about that, though, that I've noticed a lot of that times is that my biggest issue as a younger coach, and even still to this day, is I'll start trying to coach that, you know, out of them, as opposed to letting them explore and make the mistake. Do you believe that we just need to let them like stay flat there, recognize the fact that they're not in a good position, try to make the pass, and then, you know, get caught on it, and then discuss it afterwards?
In a game sense, I would honestly say, yeah. And that's probably just my style. In a training standpoint, I would say create an exercise that has them doing those motions so that it feels naturally in the game. And I would say that in a youth standpoint. And then also, you know, if you're 27 years old, you know, I would honestly coach it the same way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, even if you do something small, like if you're doing rondos, right? So, like, if you stick your keeper in rondos with the team, they have to constantly be getting that angle to open themselves up and see another player. And so, like, there's so many different things that they can do with the team or just in goalkeeper training to mimic this. But I think video is important as well, because if you sat down and you showed a youth player this and circled it and showed another example where somebody doesn't give depth, doesn't give the angle, and the trouble they get into, then it kind of can click as well for a player.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great point right there. And I think, you know, Jake, one of the things I notice a lot of the times too, is that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of the times players get frustrated and they're like, well, coach told me I'm supposed to call for the ball. So I'm calling for the ball. No one's giving me the ball. And then they get mad because they're like, well, I'm supposed to get involved in possession. They're not giving me the ball back, as opposed to understanding because they're not in a good position. And it's about them doing it. How much work do you do without a ball, just teaching them just under supporting positions?
I would say like in a video standpoint, loads in a training standpoint, try to include the ball, but there's going to be movements, all throughout training that kind of form those habits. But in a video standpoint, you know, always touching on, okay, where are you asking for the ball? Why are you asking for the ball there? Could you be somewhere else? A lot of like exploratory moments of, okay, could you be somewhere else? If you were somewhere else, how does that picture change? Because it's easy then to say, okay, if you were somewhere else, well, okay, you can make that pass. Well, no, because they would then change. So like the picture will not always be the same.
Yeah. You know, it'd be awesome for you to do, Jake, on your union channel, if you could create a PDF with like bullet points on how to watch matches, like on the specifics and like, what are the specific areas you should be watching? Cause seriously, I feel like that would be really useful, not just to young players, but to me even too. I think honestly, a lot of us get caught up in the action and we start ball watching and then we miss a lot of things because we're not watching it from that standpoint. Susk is like, I'm not me. I can see everything, but
Susk sees everything.
I see everything.
She does. She breaks things down.
I see this giant space right here. And I'm like, oh my God, play the ball there. <I'm>
like... All right. So what do we got going on here, Jake?
But even if you look at this one, right, the goalkeeper, he has to backpedal again. So we're starting to see a trend there, right, of, okay, he's going to have to backpedal, right? You're not going to typically run onto the ball, right? You're actually going to come back. And again, those are his options. So as he backpedals and he receives, he's able to, with that prep touch, play all three of those passes. And again, because it's a one-man press, he's able to then take that touch.
I feel bad for this guy, this one man press guy. when's he gonna figure out to stop doing that and just drop to the top of the 18? Like, he's just like
Jake. That was a different clip. That was a different clip.
Yeah.
But again, as a coach, as a staff, as a club, that's a good thing for us. If these things start looking the same, hopefully we would have trained those moments as well. You know, they're going to look the same in training and then they're going to look the same in a game. And if they happen over and over in the game, that's a really good thing. Cause now we're getting out really with ease.
Yeah. With ease.
At what point did that guy just give up and just start jogging back down the field?
Well, at what point does he start yelling at the guys behind him going, I need some help here.
You'll like the next one then. You'll like the next
Okay, I got to see this here.
And it gets this one.
They're being teleported onto an alien planet here. What's going on?
No, but now he's got some help.
Yeah, so now the picture's changed. He's going with two. And again, this moment is a lot different because there's two players, right? So a lot of fancy graphics to show that there's two players. So his first touch, he has to kind of bait them in by drawing that player. So he does a little fake as the ball comes in, but as he gets the ball back from the center back, Marco's going to do a little fake. And as he fakes, they widen up and then he plays through.
I love that because I think that's something Susk that, you know, we need to do a better job of teaching young players how to not telegraph their passes, how to disguise and understand, you know, that if they play where everyone else thinks they're going to play the ball, like it's going to get picked off.
Right. And the problem here, like to go attacking wise, is that your nine here is just chilling. Right. So you're 10. So your two get baited. They go left, one goes right, and he goes right back up the center again and out. So to be on the other team, I'd be yelling at my 10 being like, what are you doing? Like, because if he was higher and pressed, now you put the cavalry into a problem. But they're getting out of this because it's obvious that this has been worked on, trained, different scenarios with ease. And that's what we're talking about, is this has to be, you have to train this. Like, you know, you have to train this, not just with your goalkeeper, for everybody out there doing pass backs, touch the ball this way and kick it, but with pressure. So they can see
exactly.
These different.
Exactly.
It has to be with pressure.
And with different pressure as well, I would add on that, because his touch previously was now different than this one. And this is a fake, a move, but it's nothing crazy. These are simple things that anyone in the world can do, right? Just a little body feint and it opens it up. And again, it might not work at times, but again, if it didn't work, his depth is still good, so he can still play out to the wide areas if he really needed to. So I would say you have to train these moments. You have to allow the goalkeepers to explore
different ways to make mistakes. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that's the most difficult thing, especially with the modern goalkeeping game, you know, today, Susk, is that, you know, we saw it even, you know, with a Ramsdale, you know, a few weeks ago with Arsenal. You know, obviously he's no longer, you know, the number one at Arsenal, and he came into a situation and, you know, and unfortunately did not work out for him.
Well, you saw it in the US game the other night. Love you, Casey, but you saw Casey get in trouble with the back pass. You know, I don't know if you watched the game, Mike. But Case got in trouble with a tight touch with the back pass and put under pressure, and it went out, rebound and went out for a corner. But these things have to be trained, and you know, you have to allow your goalkeepers in practice to make these mistakes as well. Obviously you don't want to make them in the game, but that's why you have to make it in practice.
No, absolutely. All right, let's move on to this next picture right over here. So completely different viewpoint right here, which I think is really cool that we get to see a different POV. So what's going on here, Jake?
Yeah,
went
so
out
again,
for a goal
this...
kick. Sorry, Casey. It went out for a goal kick. So,
so this is a different game against Valor. And again, it's a different surface. It's the goalkeeper is much lower now, right? So before he was receiving, you know, top of the box here, he's inside the 6-yard box. Again, he's receiving with the outside of his foot. So again, just looking at things to train, okay, receive high, you know, receive low at times, And then with this touch, he's able now to play three options again. So as he takes his touch with the outside of his foot, because of where he is on the pitch, and then because of what the press is, he needs to have these three options and then potentially still a fourth option. So as he moves the ball to the center of his body here, with his right foot, he could play one, with his left foot, he could play one, and with his right foot again, he can then play central. So using those skills to receive the ball with the outside of his foot is something that we want to work on. Receiving the ball inside the 6-yard box is something that we want to work on. And again, passing with both feet as well.
So question for you right here, just because I'm noticing that he's passing with the inside foot away like this. And I know a lot of coaches, you know, get on goalkeepers for this because they feel like, you know, that chaser right there would step in, especially at the youth level, and cut that ball off because of where they would play that. Why is he playing with that inside foot? Is there a specific reason?
Because of where he took his touch. So his right foot would be the option to then play centrally. So he knows that he could play that ball with his left foot. If the attacker, if that number seven didn't cut off that, you saw how he just moved inside. If he didn't, then he probably couldn't have used his left foot to then make that pass, but he would have still been able to use his right foot. And then that would have cued our number 26, who's a right back at this moment, that would be more like a six, to then come inside and then bounce it. So it's a lot of moving parts, but the ball being central then helps him there.
Yeah, but you also have to look at this. Number one, to take this pass across the goal with the pressure, but look at the pressure on that defender that's wide to his left. There's pressure. So if he takes this touch and goes the opposite way, you're coming across the front of your goal with pressure coming on to the top of the six. But number two, your other player is under pressure as well. So I don't know if you saw that, Mike.
No, and I'm also just realizing too that like if he played it with his right foot here instead of his left, that based on the angle of where his body shape was, the second he passed that ball, that dude cuts that ball.
It'd be a much deeper pass. I just think he doesn't have an option to the other side.
Yeah, to his left, right?
He doesn't have a left option.
That center back is marked, so that kind of cues our number 26, who stood by the referee. The one that's, you know, that arrow in the middle doesn't really go to anybody. That would be the 26 that's coming in. As you can, like, he's a right back right now. It's kind of hard to, he's a right back right now. So he would come inside.
Yeah. Oh no, I didn't mean play it to the other side. I meant the other foot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I meant the other foot. All right. We'll move on from this one here. By the way, I love the names: Cavalry, Valor.
The last one was Forge as well. So
man, interesting name. Yeah. I just feel like every team's got a trumpet being played at the beginning with a Mountie.
Right.
Oh, bless you. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is starting with him in possession, right?
Yeah, I really want to showcase this one, especially at the youth level. Let your players explore, right? Let the goalkeepers work the game out. Yeah. And you have to have, and I think when you have fun with it, you probably do more of this. So again, this is inside the 6-yard box, getting pressed. And he's going to receive with a Cruyff turn.
Jeez.
At first team level, that's... That
gave me some anxiety.
Oh, my God.
But it's honestly the safest option. If he takes a touch to his right, if he takes a touch with the inside of the foot to his right, he's probably screwed. If he tries to keep it in front of him and use his left, he's probably getting pressed. So that's the safest option for him. So for me, and everyone's different, and that I'm always going to be like that. Everyone is different, you know, explore. So he would not have done that if he hadn't done that prior.
Exactly. He needs to be comfortable on the move.
Exactly. 100%. Exactly. So
he's
done it prior.
Don't all of a sudden do something you've never done before.
Exactly. Exactly. But in training, explore so that in moments like this, you can also explore. So it's not, you're not asking your goalkeepers to go out there and be crazy, but you're allowing them to do crazy things. You know, you're it's a Cruyff turn inside the 6 yard box. But you know, now we've beaten a 4 man press. Once he gives the ball to our six, he's going to turn, and then that's actually our center back there. It's all messed up, but then we're gonna break that press. So it's allowing the goalkeepers to kind of explore like that.
Well, I want to say this though, you know, because I think something that's really important here is that like the communication with the staff and like what is the staff comfortable with, and like because like I'm guessing Jake, you know, and I, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth that you all are comfortable like that, you know, maybe one or two times a year, there might be 6 points that could potentially be lost from playing this way, but the reward for allowing them to play this way, it you know, ends up being more beneficial to you guys than maybe a couple mistakes a season.
Yeah, definitely. And I picked clips that were good. There's definitely clips that are bad. there's definitely clips that are bad. So yeah, we play a certain style, and whatever your team, your club, whatever you're doing is, again, not right nor wrong, but you have to lean into those things. So for us, we're going to play this style, and we're going to lean into it when it works, and we're going to lean into it when it doesn't work as well.
So I'm assuming that if he gets caught here and this ball's taken off his foot and put in to the net for a goal, what's the conversation with the, you know, afterwards? Because he did what you were asking him to do. It just wasn't successful.
Exactly. So then it's on me. You know, you've done what I've got to live with that. And then someone above me also has to live with that. And then someone above them has to live with that. And again, we've all agreed on those things. Because in the long term, we believe that it's going to be for the best. And there's definitely moments that happens like that.
Yeah. I think going back to what you'd said earlier, though, Mike, I think that you have to there's never one answer. And so I think that, you know, some people might be looking at this going, oh, I can't do a Cruyff turn. Then don't. Then you know what the answer to that is? To put the ball long on that first back pass, step through it and put it, you know. And so if you're not comfortable in the move in this situation, then what is your answer here? Okay, you've gotten caught in, you've gotten tight. So if you have to put this ball long, then you have to put the ball long. So that is the solution for you as a goalkeeper in that moment.
No, go ahead.
No, so I'm saying, you know, for young kids watching or for anybody, the answer here isn't just one answer. It's not to do a Cruyff turn and take on, like, you know, he's comfortable in this situation. And this is something that has been trained and something that he's comfortable on the ball in this situation. If that's not where you're at, then your solution to this is going to be different.
No. Yeah. I mean, you just brought up a great point right there, Suski, in regards to like, if you need to understand as a staff member, as a coach on a staff, you need to understand what are the capabilities of your player. And if you're asking them to do something that is not in their wheelhouse, at least not yet wheelhouse, and it's not successful, you know, you've got to recognize that. Now, the opposite, Jake, is I see a lot of young coaches say, oh, well, in this scenario, you're supposed to do this. I mean, I don't never heard a coach go in this scenario, you're supposed to do a Cruyff turn. But, you know, I mean, let's just say in this scenario, you're supposed to escape somehow and play it short. And the player clears the ball and then they get upset at them for clearing the ball. And they're like, oh, that's not how we play. That's also going to do some damage to them from a mental health standpoint.
Yeah. And I think it's going to create those habits that, okay, they're going to then do things at the wrong time. So for me, I want to go back to if this didn't work, right? And he lost possession, I would ask, okay, why did you do the Cruyff turn? Right? It wouldn't be mad that he did the Cruyff turn. I would say, okay, why did you do the Cruyff turn? Oh, because I thought that I could escape the pressure. Okay. Well, then it's not about the technical ability about doing the Cruyff turn. It's about you didn't read the pressure right.
Correct.
If he could have escaped a different way and he messed up the touch and then we lost the ball because of that, well, then it's a technical error and then we can work on that. So you have to then find out, okay, why did this error occur, allow it to happen. You know, you got to put your hand up and say, okay, we ask you to do those things, but why it happened? Did you not read the pressure right? Because we're not telling you to play out when you can't beat the pressure. We're telling you to play out when you can beat the pressure. So right. you then have to go back to that and then explore that way.
Jake, I'm recognizing a little bit of Canadian accent already starting to filter through your oh,
as long as I'm not saying AF.
All right, let's move into these training sessions right here, because I know you wanted to show a little bit of some pictures of some things that people can get some ideas. And we always want to stress this, is that like these are just ideas, right? These aren't like, hey, you have to do it this way. These are just some ideas, some things to try and come up with your own variations.
Yeah, and for me, it's trying to incorporate, you know, different things in all types of training sessions. So if you look at the clip here, the goalkeeper is in the very bottom right hand of the screen, and he backpedals, and then he receives, and then he plays me. So there's an opportunity to work on that receiving skill of backpedaling and then taking a prep touch and then playing a pass in a opportunity that, you know, you don't need to work on that. It's not like we're the main point of the session is that, but we're able then to then focus on that. So as this next, as it continues forward,
okay,
you'll see the goalkeeper in the bottom.
Okay. After this one right here.
Yeah.
Good chase by these players. Okay. All right.
So on the bottom right-hand screen, you see Marco's there, starts high. He backpedals, he takes his touch. That then cues the goalkeeper then to move to where the ball is. Then Marco will play a forward pass. The goalkeeper then repositions, and now it's live. Takes a little nick. Good. Off the mannequin, then Joe makes a good save. Another example of a really simple training session. Goalkeepers are just backpedaling off the mannequin, because again, that's the trend that we're seeing, that to then take that first touch, have to backpedal. So it's, you don't need to do these elaborate training sessions, but you want to start working on these trends that you're seeing. So it's just a little short backpedal and then allowing your first touch to go the direction that you want.
So before we move on to this, Susk, any thoughts? Just really quickly, Jake, you know, in regards to this, I want to kind of go back to this picture right here, here, because a lot of people would see this and they'd be okay, like, oh, well, this, okay. No worries. Everything good with the headphones now?
No, I was going to say, and again, it's an example, just that those little micro movements to give yourself depth and just instilling that, you know, touch the mannequin, give yourself that couple yards depth, receive the ball, you know, instead of staying stagnant and receive, little depth, little hop, little energy in your body. And you're not so stagnant. You're giving yourself a little depth. You're moving your balance as well. And then you take that touch. You set yourself up.
You just brought up a really good point, Susk, because, you know, Jake, I can't tell you how many times at the youth level, you know, and obviously I'm speaking about the youth level because I'm involved in it. But I see goalkeepers don't get dynamic, don't get active until the ball's almost at their feet. And by then it's kind of too late, right? Because now you're trying to generate power.
Yeah, exactly. So you should always, it should be a hard thing, because you're always active.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing as if you're not going to stay stagnant and a cone on a shot. Like you want to be active. You want that energy in your body, a little bit of movement, little micro movements and everything. It's the same thing.
That's a great point. I love how simple this is too. All right, so we'll move on to here. By the way, I love this view. This is like the drone view, right?
Yeah, it's the best view. Getting able to use the drone.
Is this the same activity? Just a different
view? Different activity. They're trying to play around. So if you look at the four mannequins, that's kind of then the shape that you see. So you'll play around and then through. So the first pass, so as Marco receives, he plays around. And then as Mitch receives, he then plays through. Sterling receives, plays around, then plays through. So it's again, a simple kind of movement, but the goalkeepers are having to move their body laterally. They're having to move backwards. They're having to move forwards to then take their touch. And once they take their touch, they're going to have to take it in a direction that, again, they choose. And again, same thing here, just a little technical exercise. Again, these training sessions don't need to be so hard for them, but again, it's training their body and their minds to do the things that we're asking them for.
By the way, I love how fast that was going. That was clearly fast forwarded, right? That was not a
fast forward. Yeah, that was definitely fast forward.
Game speed. I was like, man.
Jake's it needed like circus music to it.
Definitely fast forward.
Coach was playing game speed. I was like, what's your guys' game speed? Jeez Louise. So now you're adding actually the goal destination of where you
yeah.
balls too.
Yeah, so if you look at where the players are receiving from, if you go back.
Okay.
So you look where the players are receiving from on these ones, right? It's probably lower in the goal. So they're receiving from a center back and they're having to then break a line of pressure. So again, they're gonna freeze the ball still and then roll the ball forwards, because that's gonna break that pressure. And then this is the area that we highlighted before that, you know, we're probably playing into. That's probably that left-sided center back. That's probably that right-sided center back. Or it might be, you know, like an inverted right back. It could be anybody really, but those are the areas on the pitch that we're looking to play. So again, showing them in training, and again, nothing crazy, but working on the receiving skills of moving backwards, of freezing the ball, then rolling it forwards. We're also going to work on, you know, keeping the ball moving, because at times that's going to happen. And we're going to work on, like in this clip, a really bad back pass, right? So as I toss this one in, the goalkeeper is going to parry it. It's bouncing and they're receiving what would be a really bad back pass, because as you see, that happens a lot in the games. So the ball is bouncing, he has to take it down, and then we play just through the middle. And then he makes a save after that.
I love this activity. I love the way that you're able to use somebody from a shot stopping standpoint on their parry and being able to utilize that for this, you know, receiving activity. That's just amazing.
No, it's great because I tell keepers this, like, I hate this in drills, right? Where your keepers, whether you have one keeper in and the other keepers are, you're utilizing them for shots or whatever, but they're just like chilling. They're like, oh, I'm taking a shot. No, everything is training, right? So everything you do, your touch on the ball, your strike on the ball, if you're taking the shots, it should be a philosophy of your goalkeeping as well. So this is amazing where the parry, now you're the one receiving the parry, so this is a bad back pass. How are you cleaning that up and how are you finishing that?
Yeah, Jake, I absolutely love that. And I think, you know, also from a time standpoint, especially for young college coaches out there, you know, you know how it is, Suski. You know, you might, Jake, you know, when you were with the Virginia women's program, I mean, like, you might have 15 minutes, you know, before.
Yeah, sometimes you're limited. Yeah, exactly. And once you get into that habit of doing it, the players also want that, because they're not just standing around. They're active at all times.
Absolutely.
So at a youth level, I would think that would be even more important, because the players want to be active.
Yeah. 100%.
Well, Jake, as we start wrapping this up, and thanks for taking the time on your vacation right now.
of course, it's to be active.
When do you go back to Calgary?
Early January. We should know our CONCACAF game. The draw is December 13th, so we could play as early as February 11th, I believe the date is. So we're back early January.
So are you going to be able to come to convention in Anaheim?
I don't think so.
Oh, man, that's going to be your first convention missed in a while, huh?
I know. But enjoying some time off, which has been good here in Florida, Orlando.
That's definitely important. All right. As we start wrapping up, Jake, it's obviously, you know, the holiday season, you know, for a lot of people right now, and which means that their teams are off, you know, when we're talking about youth teams and college teams and things like that, even pro teams. What are some receiving activities that players can do on their own during the holiday season to kind of stay sharp?
Yeah, anything with the ball. I think like two-touch activities are fun, are ways to explore with the ball. But anytime that you're going to do some sort of passing activity, make sure that you have some sort of movement in there. And again, the trends that we're seeing is the movement would be backwards. So you could incorporate this into, you know, any strength work that you're doing, any sprinting work that you're doing, anything. You could also work on your movements of moving backwards and then taking your first touch. And again, anything with the ball is then going to help you, you know how to receive with the outside of your foot, to receive with the sole, to receive with the inside, your left foot, right, your thigh. So just explore, especially as youth players, explore with the ball.
Yeah. Susk, anything you want to add?
No, 100% agree.
Yeah. Well, speaking of 100% agree, I 100% agree with you working with Jake Davis. And I want to make a little announcement right here. I know we've been both been very busy and stuff like that. But Jake Davis is going to be a pro mentor on the Union platform. So we're very excited about that. Obviously, get somebody who's had experience at every different level, from the youth game to the pro game to the women's game.
To the Canadian game.
To the game of learning how to do the country line dancing in Calgary game, which I'm sure is a big popular thing out there in Calgary. Jake, before we kind of move on and kind of explain all this, why was it important for you to get involved in something like a pro mentor program?
I think because the game is growing so much, and I just want to be a part of that. I just want to help people. I've had really, really good people that have helped me, and I want to give back. I think there's so much good knowledge out there, and the more that I find out there, the more that I want to share, the more that I learn, actually. So I'm kind of a nerd in that way, is that the more that I try to give back, I also kind of take for myself. So I always like to stay active. And I think, you know, there's just so many good platforms out there. And I think this is probably the top one of doing good things for the right reasons.
I mean, I really appreciate you saying that. I feel very humbled and honored. And I know Saskia feels the exact same way. I mean, you're somebody that we've seen be a consistent student of the game since, I think, the first time I met you at convention, I believe, is in Chicago when you were working with the Virginia Women's Program back then. And just to see your growth, not that you weren't a great coach then, but just, you know, the experiences you've had since then. And just, I think we all learned a lot, you know, after 2020, with all the time that we spent, together. I think it was really beneficial, and we want to continue that on, obviously, in the virtual sphere. So if you guys, don't know what we're talking about, I'm going to share it with, nope, that's not what I wanted to share right now at all. This is what I wanted to share right over here. And let's see here where we go. Okay. So if you guys are not familiar with what I'm talking about right here, it's the Union app. It's a great place to engage with top pros such as Jake Davis. We got all sorts of really cool stuff, including the Pro Mentor Program. If you want to do that, all you got to do is you go onto the homepage. You go to one-on-one coaching. Right over here, you see the upcoming mentors that are available. And we see one right next to Chris Sharp of the Colorado Rapids. Just as esteemed, we got Cavalry FC, Jake Davis, right next to him, right there.
That's some good company. That's some good company there with Chris Sharp, Mirza. Wow, good lineup.
It's right? a solid group. And that's just a few of them, guys. There's over 30 mentors, and we're consistently going to be adding different ones and different areas of the game. But you click on Jake. And as you click on Jake, you'll see what his schedule is, and you'll see that he's available Tuesday, December 5th. Right now, guys, he's available right now. And by that, I mean that we booked him. We booked him for this show right now. So don't reach out to him right now. You go to that. And then when you click on that, you'll find out a little bit of information about what Jake is providing during his office hours, during his mentor sessions. And then if you don't have Union Premium, you have to join Union Premium, guys, right there. And that's either annual $49.99 or monthly $4.99 for literally less than the cup of coffee. In most states, you get this amazing access to these incredible people, all the cool interactive forums, breakdown analysis, college recruiting help, all sorts of different stuff, sports performance work. And we're just really lucky to have people like Jake on board that. So thanks, Jake, for that. I know that we're going to get on a call and talk a little bit more about what you can do with the program. But if people want to start taking mentoring sessions, your thing is live. So we will send them your way because we're
amazing.
Very excited.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the time today as well. It's been fun.
Thanks, Jake.
Absolutely. And obviously, guys, if you want to reach out to us, you can do that at contact@insidethe18media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast on the Union app. You can reach out to Suskia at Suskia on the Union app, me at Goalkeeper Podcast. Also, guys, for those of you guys who are in the Richmond, Virginia area, we will be in Richmond, Virginia. Well, I will be in Richmond, Virginia at the Richmond Goalkeeping Academy. They're going to be doing a bunch of cool events there, including a charity silent auction. They're going to be doing a Keeper Wars tournament, and we're going to be doing some live Inside the 18 shows there. So shout out to them. That is December 15th through the 17th. If you're in that area, that is the information right over there. And you're like, I'm not in Richmond, Virginia. How else can I see you guys live? Well, we're also going to be at the United Soccer Coaches Convention, January 10th to the 14th, doing live shows. And if you guys are wondering how to join that, you go to unitedsoccercoaches.org. You register right there, and there's a special promo code that takes $30 off that. And all you got to do is become a union member. If you're a union member, we will send you the promo code for that for $30 off. Well, I feel like I'm on QVC now doing a lot of commercials.
Yeah, you've got a future.
Man, my voice is starting to go. Could you imagine doing that all day long?
No, I can't.
All day long. Oh my gosh, it'd be absolutely crazy. All right, guys. Well, enjoy your holiday time. That's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are
bye,
out.
Jake.
Later,
thanks, guys.